From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
It's really sad. It's almost heartbreaking to acknowledge the deep damage that the president has caused to our democracy and to all Western democracies under the threat from Putin.
That was the House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi on Tuesday as she led a group of Democratic members of Congress criticizing the president's meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin early this week.
In 1975, America and the Western world united to counter the Soviet threat by forming the Helsinki Commission. And well, that was really the work of President Ford, who was part of the negotiation and also signing the accord.
Then President Ford and the then Soviet leader, Leonid Brezhnev, were among the 35 heads of state who signed the Helsinki Accords on August 1, 1975. President Ford spoke at the signing.
Military competition must be controlled. Political competition must be restrained. Crises must not be manipulated or exploited for unilateral advantages that could lead us again to the brink of war. The process of negotiation must be sustained, not at a snail's pace, but with demonstrated enthusiasm and visible progress.
At the time that President Ford spoke those words, the U.S. and the Soviet Union had achieved détente. 43 years later, the situation between Washington and Moscow has become much more tense. That didn't appear to be of any concern to Representative Pelosi on Tuesday, who was more focused on the 2018 elections.
Instead of standing up for our democracy and democratic principles, President Trump cowered in the presence of Putin, and the entire world watched and saw that. Trump's eagerness to sell out America proves the Russians must have something, personally, politically, or financially, on President Trump. As DNI Dan Coats has said, the intelligence community has stated the Russians are once again waging a campaign to interfere in our elections. But President Trump continues to take the word of Russians, enthusiastically embracing their excuses, and the president gave a green light to continue to attack our democracy to the Russians. Yesterday, the president sided with the enemy who made an assault on our democracy.
Also on Tuesday, Trump held a meeting with some lawmakers at the White House. That meeting began like this.
My meeting with President Putin was really interesting in so many different ways, because we haven't had relationships with Russia for a long time. And we started. Let me begin by saying that, once again, the full faith and support for America's intelligence agencies. I have a full faith in our intelligence agencies. Whoops, they just turned off the light. That must be the intelligence agencies. There it goes. Okay.
The lights in the room had gone out for a moment.
You guys okay? It was strange, but that's okay. So I'll begin by stating that I have full faith and support for America's great intelligence agencies, always had. And I have felt very strongly that while Russia's actions had no impact at all on the outcome of the election, let me be totally clear in saying that, and I've said this many times, I accept our intelligence community's conclusion that Russia's meddling in the 2016 election took place. Could be other people also. There's a lot of people out there. There was no collusion at all. And people have seen that, and they've seen that strongly. The House has already come out very strongly on that. A lot of people have come out strongly on that. I thought that I made myself very clear by having just reviewed the transcript. Now, I have to say, I came back and I said, what is going on? What's the big deal? So I got a transcript. I reviewed it. I actually went out and reviewed a clip of an answer that I gave. And I realize that there is a need for some clarification. It should have been obvious. I thought it would be obvious, but I would like to clarify just in case it wasn't. In a key sentence in my remarks, I said the word would instead of wouldn't. The sentence should have been, I don't see any reason why I wouldn't or why it wouldn't be Russia. So just to repeat it, I said the word would instead of wouldn't. And the sentence should have been, and I thought it would be maybe a little bit unclear on the transcript or unclear on the actual video. The sentence should have been, I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be Russia. Sort of a double negative. So you can put that in, and I think that probably clarifies things pretty good by itself. I have on numerous occasions noted our intelligence findings that Russians attempted to interfere in our elections. Unlike previous administrations, my administration has and will continue to move aggressively to repeal any efforts and repel. We will stop it. We will repel it. Any efforts to interfere in our elections. We're doing everything in our power to prevent Russian interference in 2018. And we have a lot of power. As you know, President Obama was given information just prior to the election, last election, 2016, and they decided not to do anything about it. The reason they decided that was pretty obvious to all. They thought Hillary Clinton was going to win the election. And they didn't think it was a big deal. When I won the election, they thought it was a very big deal. And all of a sudden, they went into action, but it was a little bit late. So he was given that in sharp contrast to the way it should be. And President Obama, along with Brennan and Clapper and the whole group that you see on television now, probably getting paid a lot of money by your networks, they knew about Russia's attempt to interfere in the election in September, and they totally buried it. And as I said, they buried it because they thought that Hillary Clinton was going to win. Turned out it didn't happen that way. By contrast, my administration has taken a very firm stance. It's a very firm stance on a strong action. We're going to take strong action to secure our election systems and the process. Furthermore, as has been stated, and we've stated it previously and on many occasions, no collusion. Yesterday, we made significant progress toward addressing some of the worst conflicts on Earth. So when I met with President Putin for about 2.5 hours, we talked about numerous things. And among those things are the problems that you see in the Middle East, where they're very much involved, we're very much involved. I entered the negotiations with President Putin from a position of tremendous strength. Our economy is booming, and our military is being funded $700 billion this year, $716 billion next year. It will be more powerful as a military than we've ever had before. President Putin and I addressed the range of issues, starting with the civil war in Syria, and need for humanitarian aid and help for people in Syria. We also spoke of Iran and the need to halt the nuclear ambitions and the destabilizing activities taking place in Iran. As most of you know, we ended the Iran deal, which was one of the worst deals anyone could imagine, and that's had a major impact on Iran, and it substantially weakened Iran, and we hope that at some point Iran will call us and we'll maybe make a new deal, or we maybe won't. But Iran is not the same country that it was 5 months ago, that I can tell you. They're no longer looking so much to the Mediterranean and the entire Middle East. They've got some big problems that they can solve probably much easier if they deal with us. So we'll see what happens. But we did discuss Iran. We discussed Israel and the security of Israel, and President Putin is very much involved now with us in a discussion with Bibi Netanyahu on working something out with surrounding Syria. And Syria, and specifically with regards to the security and long-term security of Israel. A major topic of discussion was North Korea and the need for it to remove its nuclear weapons. Russia has assured us of its support. President Putin said he agrees with me 100%, and they'll do whatever they have to do to try and make it happen. Discussions are ongoing, and they're going very, very well. We have no rush for speed. The sanctions are remaining. The hostages are back. There have been no tests. There have been no rockets going up for a period of 9 months. And I think the relationships are very good. So we'll see how that goes. We have no time limit. We have no speed limit. We have we're just going through the process. But the relationships are very good. President Putin is going to be involved in the sense that he is with us. He would like to see that happen. Perhaps the most important issue we discussed at our meeting prior to the press conference was the reduction of nuclear weapons throughout the world. The United States and Russia have 90%, as I said, and we can have a big impact. But nuclear weapons is, I think, the greatest threat of our world today. And they're a great nuclear power. We're a great nuclear power. We have to do something about nuclear. And so that was a matter that we discussed actually in great detail, and President Putin agrees with me. The matters we discussed are profound in their importance and have the potential to save millions of lives. I understand the many disagreements between our countries, but I also understand that dialogue and the when you think about a dialogue with Russia or dialogue with other countries, but dialogue with Russia in this case, where we've had such poor relationships for so many years, dialogue is a very important thing, and it's a very good thing. So if we get along with them, great. If we don't get along with them, then we won't get along with them. But I think we have a very good chance of having some very positive things. I thought that the meeting that I had with President Putin was really strong. I think that they were willing to do things that, frankly, I wasn't sure whether or not they would be willing to do. And we'll be having future meetings, and we'll see whether or not that comes to fruition. But we had a very, very good meeting. So I just wanted to clear up. I have the strongest respect for our intelligence agencies headed by my people. We have great people, whether it's Gina or Dan Coats or any of them. I mean, we have tremendous people, tremendous talent within the agencies. I think they're being guided properly, and we all want the same thing. We want success for our country.
Meanwhile, on Thursday, Russia's President Vladimir Putin spoke before the assembled staff of Russia's foreign ministry and laid out the tasks that he saw for the ministry shaping up on the international scene.
Thank you.
Уважаемые коллеги,
colleagues,
приветствую вас на нашей традиционной.
I'm happy to see you at our traditional meeting. First of all, I would like to thank the leadership of the foreign ministry, all the diplomats, all the veterans of the diplomatic service for your contribution in developing international cooperation of our country. All of our diplomatic mission work together in a well-coordinated way, given the current situation in the world. Russia has been consistently pursuing an independent and well-balanced foreign policy. Russia's involvement in international affairs is based on our key national interest to create favorable and safe conditions for our country's breakthrough development to address immense social and economic tasks at hand, improve the quality of life for our people. Our people want Russia to be a strong, independent country. We are open to have equal partnership with all countries and regional alliances. Being a permanent member of the UN Security Council, Russia will always remain committed to the basic principles of this organization's sovereignty, equality, non-interference in the internal affairs of other states, and fair resolution of all conflicts. Working collectively based on international law, we can address the most complex international issues. Our pursuit of global security and stability, countering new threats and challenges, is in much demand worldwide. Our allies share our allies in the CSTO, BRICS, SCO share our views on the basic principles of the new world order. These countries constitute a majority of the planet's population. This is the approach that we will use in resolving acute international crisis. In Syria, we were able to defeat international terrorism, ISIS, and other terrorist groups. Thus, we were able to preserve the statehood of Syria and create conditions for the restoration of the Syrian economy and bringing back refugees. Once again, I would like to thank our military for their professionalism. And of course, diplomats too. They were also very much involved in what we are doing in Syria. Russia is doing good work in the Astana process. Earlier this year, we held the Syrian National Dialogue Congress in Sochi, which was hugely successful, creating preconditions for a legitimate restoration of the Syrian state. The next step would be convention of a constitutional commission and adoption of a new constitution under the aegis of the United Nations. Of course, humanitarian efforts to support Syria are also important, and we are very much involved in that. This would be important for Syria, for this region as a whole, and for many other countries around the world, because this would decrease the immigration burden on European countries. Collective efforts and dialogue is what Russia has always proposed for the Korean Peninsula as well. We work together in China to prepare a plan to normalize the situation there. We are happy that the principles proposed by us proved useful. The parties came to the negotiation table and abandoned actions which could have caused dramatic consequences. Recent positive trends, which were partly due to the efforts taken by President Trump, will continue further. But we also have negative examples where agreements we have reached together are abandoned. For example, I'm referring to the step taken by the United States in withdrawing from the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Currently, it is extremely important to preserve this deal and prevent uncontrolled growth of tensions in the Middle East. The situation in southeastern Ukraine remains complex. The reasons are the same. The current Ukrainian authorities refuse to honor the commitments they have made in resolving this conflict. They are unwilling to engage in a dialogue with their own citizens, instead relying on brute force. We still believe that the Minsk agreements remain the only foundation for a peaceful resolution of the situation. Colleagues, what we are doing in the international arena, we don't do this just for the sake of some abstract greatness or to create problems for others. Our key goal, once again, I repeat, is to create conditions for our country's economic development. Within the next few years, Russia should firmly secure a place among top five economic superpowers in the world and improve the living standards of our people. To achieve these strategic goals, we have to take advantage of all the opportunities that we have in the international arena. We should be practical, securing new markets, expanding our exports, bringing in new technology, overcome existing barriers that stand in the way of Russian companies working abroad. The principle of competition and openness is often replaced with protectionism in international trade today. Market values are replaced with political expediency. Trade is being politicized. Russia's foreign policy, on the contrary, should be more economically oriented and more rational. It is particularly important to create space of good neighborly relations, security and stability around our country. The Eurasian Economic Union is, of course, a key integration project for Russia. We are happy that our partners are working together with us in Eurosec, and this work is quite effective. We are using integration opportunities to stimulate the growth of the economies of all member states, and we want people and companies to feel the practical result of this work. We have a free trade zone with Vietnam. We are engaged in talks with Israel. Serbia, Singapore soon will start talks with India. We prepared a free trade agreement with Iran. On the whole, we have about 50 treaties being prepared with Eurosec. We have good prospects in working together with China. In March, Eurosec signed an agreement with China on trade cooperation. Eurosec and China's initiative of One Belt, One Road complement each other. Harmonizing these projects will provide a strong foundation for a greater Eurasian partnership, space for economic cooperation free from all sorts of barriers. This is the logic that we should also use in developing our relations with the European Union. Despite current difficulties, the EU remains one of our key trade partners. We have a lot of economic interests in common with the EU. For decades, we've been developing together our transport and infrastructure. All the business projects that we have with Europe, including, for example, Nord Stream 2, are purely commercial, economically feasible. There is no political subtext to it. The key to ensuring security and stability in Europe is in expanding cooperation and rebuilding trust, not in deploying new military bases and military infrastructure close to Russian borders, which is what is happening right now. Such aggressive actions posing direct threat to Russia, we will respond to them appropriately. To our colleagues who seek escalation, trying to draw Ukraine or Georgia into NATO should consider the consequences of their irresponsible policies. What we need today is constructive, positive agenda, bringing our positions closer. This is what we discussed in my meeting with U.S. President Donald Trump. Even though our views are vastly different, we both agreed that relations between Russia and the U.S. are unsatisfactory. In many ways, they are even worse than during the Cold War. It would be naive to think that problems that have been accumulated over the years can be resolved within just a few hours. Nobody expected that, of course. Still, I believe that we've started on our way towards this goal. It is good that we finally had an opportunity to have a proper meeting. We'll have to wait and see how events will unfold, especially considering that certain forces in the U.S. can want to play down the results of the Helsinki summit. Well, I would like to say now a few words ad lib, in a way. We know that there are certain forces in the United States which can sacrifice, which would be happy to sacrifice U.S.-Russia relations for the sake of their domestic political goals. They are ready to sacrifice the interests of their businesses. U.S. companies are losing millions in contracts, losing jobs, their cooperation with Russian partners. These are tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of jobs. They are willing to sacrifice the interests of their allies in Europe and in the Middle East. For example, I'm referring to Israel. We also talked about the Golan Heights when we talked about Syria. And it seems like they're not interested in that. They're also willing to sacrifice the issues of their own security. I'd like to point out to you that in 2021, the New START treaty will expire. Now, we can live without this treaty. Just a few years ago, we could have lived without this treaty, but we did the right thing and signed this treaty. And we need to start working today to prolong, to extend this treaty. Otherwise, in a year and a half, it will just run out its course, and there will be no more treaty any longer. When I talk about these forces in the United States, you know, this is not in line with our political philosophy, because we've always been taught that people who work for the state in the interest of their nation should first and foremost think about the fundamental principles, fundamental values of their country. But no, there are forces in the United States that only care about their own private interests. These are the kind of people who are pitiful, petty, despicable people, as they were described in Soviet books. But on the contrary, I think these people are quite smart sometimes. For example, when they want to feed their stories to people, they use this as a pretext. They do this not to praise someone or to criticize someone. The reason I mention this is because I want us to take this into account in our practical work when we deal with Americans. These are just facts that we face today. Still, Russia is open to develop contacts with the United States as long as they're based on equality. This is not something that just our two countries need. The whole world needs this. Being two nuclear superpowers, we have special responsibility for global security and stability. Now I'd like to say a few words on a totally different subject. The FIFA World Cup has just completed. We had many world leaders visiting our country, and also hundreds of thousands of football fans from all over the world. They saw a different kind of Russia, Russia that is open to the world, Russia that is friendly. This is an obviously breakthrough. This is what we can call popular democracy, and you made an important contribution to that as well. Congratulations. And thank you. Colleagues, of course, the burden on the foreign ministry, on our diplomatic mission, will only keep increasing more and more. But I would like to assure you that Russia's leadership will always do everything necessary to support you, take care of your material situation, protect people who work in the foreign ministry. We have made a number of important decisions to this effect. At the same time, on some of the sensitive issues, salaries, social guarantees for your family members, housing conditions, we haven't been able to fully resolve those issues yet, and I would like the cabinet, the government, to pay special attention to these matters and not deal with them in a bureaucratic manner. We need to provide proper conditions for our diplomats to perform their professional functions. This is extremely important. This concludes the first part of my speech, and the next part will take place behind closed doors without the media.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.